Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live out at Duncan at 326 Harding Place. Come get your coffee. Come get your donuts. We're going to be out here the rest of the show. We'll take your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025. But come visit us at Duncan. Lots of people rolling in here already, and we appreciate it. As we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. Rex Road is on vacation. Not only on vacation, but he is preparing, Charles, to officiate a wedding this weekend, which, as I texted you yesterday, is something that I would pay big money to see.
Yeah, I want to see him seal the deal as an officiant to a wedding. So, yeah, I love that he gets left on the promos, though. No Joe, but definitely featured prominently on the promos for the show.
That's right. There's no doubt.
Well, one of my favorite things from the Mike and the Mad Dog ESPN films that they did a couple of years ago was when Francesa went on vacation and Mad Dog changed the jingles. It took Francesa out of all of the jingles, and Francesa was apparently so upset by that, he left his vacation early to come back to work.
That's what we should have done to Retro.
That's what we should have done.
We definitely, there's got to be some money in the budget for that somewhere.
No doubt.
Just for the joke, for the gag.
That's right. So, Charles, an interesting night last night. Tom Brady inducted into the New England Patriots Hall of Fame, got his jersey retired, you know. Randy Moss is up there. Bill Belichick came back out there. It was cool to watch and see some clips of that. I know an interesting piece that you come out with today at Yahoo Sports regarding Tom Brady and the quarterback position. What did you learn when speaking with Tom Brady yesterday?
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to him yesterday morning prior to everything going down at the Patriots Hall of Fame. And you know, it's interesting because sometimes you enter into these conversations and you think you're asking, you know, a relatively benign question. You're going to tap somebody's knowledge on a position. And, you know, I've been working on sort of projecting out the NFL and looking at what the league's going to look like in 20 years. And I just, you know, I asked them about the quarterback position. You know, you said, look, you're a rare individual who's had a chance to play the position for decades at an elite level. And, you know, do you see a ceiling, you know, is there a higher ceiling at this position? Like, where is this position going? Is there room for innovation? And, you know, how would you project that? And Brady was like, I mean, he just said flat out, he sees quarterback and going backwards in the NFL. He doesn't think the quality of quarterbacks in the NFL is, improving. He thinks it's, reversing. And he brought up what I, you know, I thought was a pretty interesting rationale for it, where, you know, he layered, you know, so part of it was like, look at the product of players that's getting to the NFL from the lower levels of football. He's basically saying that a lot of, you know, quarterbacks are coming out of college where they're not developing at the position. They're finding a fit of convenience. Like, what do they do well? And if it's not working out somewhere, they go somewhere else to find out, you know, find a settling spot that suits what they do well, rather than, you know, toughing it out, developing, you know, figuring out a different skill set, getting coached to change and improve as a player. And, you know, he said the result is the NFL is getting, you know, players who just have not pushed themselves to develop beyond the boundaries of their skill set. And, you know, he brought up what I thought was pretty interesting. He said, look, he brought up some of these players that I asked him about Drake May, and he brought up like what he would want for Drake May. And he said, like, when I came in the league, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, he's like, you know, Steve McNair was a quarterback. Brett Favre was a quarterback. He mentioned basically all these other quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, the guys he looked up to and that he wanted to push himself to be that kind of a player were guys that didn't look at the sideline, you know, from the line of scrimmage. They weren't waiting for a defense to be set and then looking over to see, you know, what's getting called from the sideline from a player and an audible. Instead, you know, Brady said, myself, I had control of those 11 guys. When I went out there and I saw the defense set itself, I decided what was best in that moment for us. And I think what he's saying is, from a field general standpoint, quarterbacks used to run the offense with a level of autonomy that is starting to disappear. He sees a lot of coaches that are now taking that control And, you know, I think that's a conversation we've all had before. Like, you know, part of the reason why Kyle Shanahan loves Brock Purdy so much is because he tells Brock Purdy, here's the offense I want you to run. Here's how I want you to run it. Brock Purdy goes out there and he does it. He runs it the way, you know, Kyle Shanahan wants it done. And there's, in some ways, a little bit of a paint-by-numbers aspect of that. Not always, but I just think it's interesting because, to me, we've all asked ourselves, what is Tom Brady going to be as an NFL analyst? And I think we're finding out. Like, he's got some opinions, and he's got opinions that not a lot of people are – there's going to be plenty of people who don't necessarily like it. And I don't think that's the worst thing for him, because the last thing we needed was another wallflower, you know, in the booth. And if he's going to be the opposite of that, that's probably a great thing for all of us.
No, I'm all for that. Look, and I'll be honest with you, Charles, like, watching Belichick do some of the TV stuff that he's done, whether it's McAfee or elsewhere, like, he's had a little bit of personality too. Like, it's been kind of fun to watch it that way. Speaking of Belichick, while we're on the topic, you know, obviously he did not land a job this offseason. I'm interested to see, you know, what he does kind of in the media landscape this year. Do you think he's done? Do you think there's another head coaching opportunity in the future for him at age 72 right now? How do you view the Belichick part of this?
Well, it's interesting because we're seeing a reimagining of him. And I don't think – I've seen some people touch on it, but I don't think anyone's really done the deep dive on how thus far – we're seeing Belichick put into positions and landscapes from a media aspect that we're not necessarily used to. So we're starting to see him laugh, make jokes, you know, maybe a little bit of a lighter side of Bill Belichick. Yes, he still shares strong opinions, but I think and I would assume this is purposeful. He's, you know, casting himself in a much more relatable kind of light to NFL fans that we're not accustomed to. We're used to, you know, Bill being Bill at the podium and mumbling and moving from one question to the next. And just sort of that guy that, hey, you stomached it when you're winning championships, and you stomached it when everything was going well. And he was surrounded by, you know, players like Brady who, you know, I guess cast the success the way that they did. But then when things went bad, that wore thin very quickly. And I think one of the things that he experienced, obviously, this last offseason was that there weren't a ton of franchises running out there to go, yeah, let's embrace this. Sure, he's had the track record of success, no doubt about it. But there are a lot of options out there that are not necessarily Bill, and there's a lot of options that are younger. There's a lot of options that, you know, ownership thinks might connect better either with the executives that are already in their organization or, you know, the players that are on the roster. I do think that factored in with the Atlanta Falcons choosing Raheem Morris over Bill Belichick. And, you know, so I think this time off that he has right now is not just driven by, hey, let me go out and, you know, carve my niche in the media landscape. It's, let me show people a side of me that not necessarily everybody knows. And I think it's interesting. Like, to me, it's going to be really intriguing to see how that settles in over, you know, this season and whether that opens some doors for him in 2025. And I don't think doors are completely closed. I'm telling you, I'm watching Dallas because, you know, Mike McCarthy in Dallas, he has not achieved what – look, he's had some success. They made the playoffs. They've taken some steps. But he has not achieved what ownership clearly has wanted. And I think the one thing about the Cowboys that probably gets underplayed is there's a little bit of an atmosphere there of relaxation, a little bit of atmosphere of, you know, Jory Epstein, who works for us, used to cover the Cowboys, and you know, she coined it as like kind of a country club atmosphere. Well, you want to get rid of that? You want somebody to come in with a roster that might be ready made to win? Let's see, obviously, if Dak Prescott's there beyond 2024. One of the coaches that you probably go and you get is Bill Belichick, because he's going to change some things fundamentally inside that building. And the last thing you're going to have is a country club atmosphere where players are showing up with anything on their mind other than doing the exact job they've been given.
Charles Robinson joining us here on Robbie and Rexrode. Well, maybe Robbie and Adam today because Rexrode isn't here.
He's still getting the benefits.
Too
much airtime.
Too
Rex
much
Road
airtime
today.
For Rex Road. Anyway, one of my favorite things to do, Charles, is to look at the back pages of the New York tabloids. And a couple of days ago, they had a great one with a picture of Aaron Rodgers with his quote from at the end of the season, talking about everyone. You know, he used some colorful language about people needing to focus on football.
Yeah.
And then him not showing up for this mandatory part of minicamp with the headline "Full of Hot Air," AAR. Very clever by the New York Post, as always. Where in the world is Aaron Rodgers? That's the first question. And also, you know, how do you feel like the Jets have handled this? Because Robert Saleh, their head coach, came out and said it was an unexcused absence. But
yeah,
it was an unexcused absence that apparently they were given a heads up on, and that everyone is on the same page. And I know that Aaron Rodgers did show up for voluntary portions of minicamp. But when you consider everything around Aaron Rodgers, the things he has said, you know, the way his season went, all five snaps of it last year, I know this is a question that could be asked at any era over the past however many years. What is going on with the New York Jets?
Yeah, Robbie's got to be loving this, because I think we talk about Aaron on a weekly basis, and yet I'm like, he just keeps offering it up. Like, it's just, he looks like every week he does something that keeps himself in this kind of a conversation. And yeah, this is this one to me is interesting, because, you know, I think the Jets are walking a tightrope here, and that tightrope is, yes, they knew he was going to be out of pocket. No, they did not want to call it excused, because I think they don't want to send that message to the rest of the roster that, hey, you know, Aaron is his own category, and we're going to go ahead and excuse this guy missing out on a mandatory minicamp, which is just not quarterbacks, unless it's related to like a contract, issue. They don't just miss things like this. And so this is extremely unusual, particularly for somebody who, as you said, and the New York media and pretty much everybody has pointed out repeatedly over the last few days, is that, yeah, this is a guy that harped about focusing on football, not bringing controversy and all these things. And yet, what has this offseason been about? He's brought a ton of controversy. He's talked about all kinds of stuff that had nothing to do with football. And now he's not showing up to football activities. Now I'm going to tread lightly here, because I've asked a number of people where he is. No one will say, which is interesting to me. And in some ways, I know how Aaron loves to feel like he's setting up the media. And part of me wonders, and this is just the conspiratorial nature of me, I learned that from Aaron, is he setting up the media with this? Like, is there something going on that, you know, we find out in a month, there's a reason he missed. And when we find out what it is, we all look like jerks. You know, we all look, oh, we were so highly critical of it. And, you know, it was this thing that is completely understandable. And now we're all the Jags for, you know, piling on Aaron for missing in a situation that clearly he should have missed minicamp for. I don't know if that's the case. But again, I have a sneaking suspicion, as I always do, that, you know, Aaron is sitting there trying, you know, potentially doing something where he can come out on the other end and go, yeah, see, look at the media. This is their typical stuff. They didn't need to know. I was trying to keep something private. But I will say this, the people around him are doing a really good job of keeping it concealed in terms of what exactly he's doing. And I think part of it is even they don't know. That's in some respects how out of left field this was for him. And regardless, it's whatever the rationale is, why ever he's not there, it's not good for the Jets. And I think the Jets could have handled this in a fashion where, Robert Saleh didn't come out and just flat out say, yeah, it's an unexcused absence. And they could have used, you know, different words. And I think part of that, again, is sending a message to the team. Like, we're not going to just say, yeah, sure, Aaron can miss, and, you know, we're going to cover for him or whatever. But, you know, I also think they're playing the other side of it as well, where they're like, you know, the whole song and dance, like, yeah, we knew this was coming, and it is what it is, and we're working with it, and it's not like, you know, Aaron didn't tell us. And so I think they're trying to take the rough edges off it a little bit. But from a bottom line football standpoint, it's just another layer of here we go with Aaron. And I think even Pat McAfee at one point said, you know, the Packers got to be so happy that they're not a part of this or something to that effect. And that's one of the first things I thought is just like how over and over and over the Green Bay Packers and general manager Brian Gutekunst got to be like, man, it's so great that we're no longer tethered to, you know, this kind of offseason stuff that seems to swirl around him. And by the way, we'll revisit if there's any struggles from the Jets at all, you know, in camp or starting off the season or whatever, it's going to get focused through something like this where here's a clear opportunity for you to build some chemistry, get back on the field, break yourself in, and you're not there. Why weren't you?
Well, I can tell you, Charles, as somebody who is a Green Bay Packers supporter, it has been very nice to just watch Jordan Love show up to camp.
Is there anybody on earth who has come out, and I was remarkably critical of Brian Gutekunst at different, you know, stages of that whole thing falling apart in Green Bay, but I've completely reassessed my position, and I'm like, I kind of see it more than I ever did before in terms of why this became such an untenable situation for, you know, for Brian dealing with, you know, things on a, I guess in my mind, there were some elements of me feeling like, well, he's overreacting, he's overstating how much of a pain this was on an annual basis. And now I'm like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe he was completely right about all of it.
Well, Charles, speaking of Love, I mean, it does kind of feel like he may be the next quarterback here to get a deal. Brian Gutekunst did talk about how he wants to get a deal done with Jordan Love before camp. Now, Love, obviously, we've talked about him with you before. I mean, he's got the 1 year as the starter, and half of the year was, okay. And then he turned into a really, really good player by the end of last season. He's going to make a lot of money. I think we know that. How close do you think this is to getting done, and what do you think the reaction is going to be when people see the money that Jordan Love gets paid?
I will be surprised if it's not in the books by the time they get camp underway in late July. And, you know, I think for all the consternation on a number of these quarterback deals, I do think a lot of them are going to get laced up, you know, as we get close to guys walking through that door and reporting to facilities or training camp destinations in midsummer. So, are people going to be shocked? I don't know. Should people even be shocked anymore? It's going to be $50 million plus annual average value for Jordan Love. I think if it's a dollar less than that, that's what I will be shocked at. A little scary to put all your eggs in that kind of a basket when, as you said, you know, he kind of had two seasons, and I mean really three if you watch it, because it was like, hey, encouraging. Oh no, there was the oh no portion of the season, and then the wow, this guy looks like the best quarterback in football for half a year, and then going into playoffs. And I was at that Dallas playoff game where, you know, he threw a touchdown pass to Dontayvion Wicks that to me was so impressive and such a shock. I yelled in the press box, and I got the please don't cheer. And I was like, I'm not cheering. I'm just shocked. Like what he just did. Like that's how good he was down the stretch, and without a bona fide, clear-cut number one receiver, right? I mean, like a lot of young talent in the wide receiver room, but it was all rookies and second-year guys, even if you look at the tight end depth chart. And so you sort of feel like, hey, they're barely scratching the surface with the talent where he's going, but also the surrounding players. And, you know, there's a ton to be encouraged by, but there's also risk. You know, I say the same thing about Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. We've talked about that when people are harping on Will Levis. There's not, you know, let's give defensive coordinators enough film to figure out exactly what you do wrong, and then let's watch them design defenses to attack that consistently. I still think Jordan Love, that's being worked out on the, you know, on the other sideline. So I think Green Bay should be encouraged. I think they're in a spot now where, what else do you do? There's, you know, this is a commitment you got to make. And he showed you at least for a half season that he can really probably even exceed your expectations. And that's why I think a deal will ultimately get done. And, you know, me personally, I hope he does well, because I love the league when quarterbacks are playing well. And, you know, Lord knows we need more and more guys who can carry franchises and be entertaining on Sundays. And that's definitely what Jordan Love did last season.
Let's keep it on the quarterbacks. One thing I saw yesterday that I was actually interested to see, perhaps surprised, in Minnesota, Kevin O'Connell said that Sam Darnold will continue as the Vikings' lead quarterback when training camp opens, and not J.J. McCarthy. Is that a surprise to you? And do you see a world where Sam Darnold is starting Week One for the Vikings and not J.J. McCarthy, considering the move that they made to get him?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a surprise considering what came out of the organization. Like when they signed Darnold, to basically 1 year, $10 million bridge deal. The first thing that you think is like, okay, clearly they're drafting a quarterback here. $10 million is, I would say, the tippy top of, backup quarterback salary. And it crosses a little bit into, hey, the backup quarterback that you also think is, going to hold the fort at least initially for a franchise. That's why he gets paid what he got paid. But people in the organization were also saying, hey, he's got a skill set here. Like this isn't a nobody. He started games in the NFL, probably got his head screwed up at a point with the New York Jets under Adam Gase where he regressed, he regressed from a confidence standpoint, from a skill standpoint. He was probably blunted a little bit in terms of where his development was going. And that got a little more back on track once he left and spent time with Kyle Shanahan, who in San Francisco did nothing but sing his praises. It was clear to me when I rolled through their camp last year, I was like, look, they love him and they clearly love him far more than Trey Lance. And this guy, it was no doubt in my mind as I exited camp, I was like, Darnold's going to be the backup behind Brock Purdy. If Brock Purdy's healthy, his backup's going to be Sam Darnold. And the starter, if Brock Purdy isn't healthy in the interim, is going to be Sam Darnold. That means a lot, in the landscape of the NFL. And it particularly means a lot to teams that run that kind of, McVay, Shanahan type of offense, which is exactly what O'Connell runs in Minnesota. So the opportunity, was there, and it was a good fit because Darnold walks in knowing that playbook. He understands a lot of what the Vikings were already doing, which gets him ahead of the game. And what did we all say about J.J. McCarthy? We're like, we don't know. Like, we don't know ultimately how he's going to project out. He's got a skill set. He brings certain things to the table from a leadership aspect that teams love. He's, goes 27-1 at Michigan. That does matter, in NFL front offices and to coaching staffs. But, there's a lot of runway ahead for him to have to get better as a player. And I personally continue to be a proponent of teams that take rookie quarterbacks and go, we're not going to force it. We will absolutely sit a guy. And, as long as we feel like we need to sit him to get him prepared. I don't think the Michael Penix pick, the oddity that it was in Atlanta, is the worst thing in the world, that Michael Penix could literally sit there and learn an offense and, learn how to be a professional quarterback behind a player who's done it for a long time in Kirk Cousins. I don't think it's the worst thing for J.J. McCarthy to look at Sam Darnold, see what he's gone through in his career, and there have been a whole lot of bumps to learn from, and embrace some of that. So I think there's a very, very real possibility that Sam Darnold starts the season for the Minnesota Vikings. And, I think people just need to be patient when it comes to a number of these guys who got picked in the first round, just letting them learn the position, letting them learn an offense and not just piling them in and potentially, screwing up their confidence and the trajectory that they're trying to get under themselves.
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it. And, let's get Joe off those promos next week. Next Thursday, we'll bleep out Joe's name as we bring in the promos. Can we do that?
Teaser, you have homework. Charles Robinson has assigned you homework.
What about Robbie and Rox Road instead of Rex Road?
Yeah, that's even better. We should do that.
Rox Road.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll take your reaction to what Charles had to say. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Your thoughts on the Titans, your thoughts on all things NFL. We'll get some thoughts on the Aaron Rodgers situation coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Hey, Robbie Stanley here. If you're running a fast-growing business in Nashville, listen up. NetSuite's Business Grows Here event is coming to Nashville on Tuesday, June 25th, and you don't want to miss it. It's right around the corner. Why Nashville? Because NetSuite knows Nashville is a hub for entrepreneurs with forward-thinking founders, a top talent pool, and pro-business leadership. You can apply to attend the business event of the year, Business Grows Here, taking place at the Conrad Hotel coming up on June 25th. You'll learn how Tennessee is paving the way for new business growth and capital, see how technology fueled by AI is shaping the way we grow and run our businesses, and you'll be inspired by leaders who have built and led billion-dollar businesses like Jamie Siminoff, founder of Ring Video Doorbell, and Burt Nihil, CEO of the Tennessee Titans. NetSuite by Oracle, Business Grows Here is free to attend if you qualify, so apply right now and find out. Seats are going quickly. Black out your calendar for Tuesday, June the 25th. You can apply right now at netsuite.com/Nashville. Once again, that's netsuite.com/Nashville, and you can also visit thegamenashville.com/events for a link on our website as well. The Savannah Bananas are coming to Nashville, and you can meet the team's players and coaches, plus win tickets to their sold-out games this weekend. Join Chase McCabe and Big Joe tomorrow from 9 to 11 at the Duncan in Cool Springs, 500 Cool Springs Boulevard, for more details. Speaking of Duncan, we are out here live today at 326 Harding Place. Next 30 minutes, we're going to be out here. Lots of people rolling in already. Just met Doug, who's an avid listener to the program, so appreciate Doug for dropping by.
He had a mango pineapple refresher.
Yeah, looked pretty good.
Looked pretty good. Nice and bright.
Pretty good stuff.
Ooh, there's even a mascot now.
Oh boy.
There's a Duncan mascot.
Now
oh my
talking.
Goodness.
If you're
afraid of costumed characters like I was when I went to Disney World when I was 4 or 5 years old, maybe don't come out to Duncan right now. But for everybody else, please come out to Duncan. It was terrifying. They were scary, man. Like a 6-foot Mickey? Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Got some tickets to give away to see Alanis Morissette at Bridgestone Arena coming up on June 23rd. Brought to you by Green Trees. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Alanis Morissette at Bridgestone Arena coming up on June 23rd. Brought to you by Green Trees. The Aaron Rodgers situation. So Rodgers, as we all know, tore his Achilles last year, 4 snaps into the season. Missed the whole year. Jets miss out on the playoffs. He's rehabbed, is healthy, and has gone through the offseason program. Now, he has been there at the OTAs and has been participating. He is not at mandatory minicamp with the Jets, and that has caused an absolute firestorm up with the New York media. Beyond the, you know, the Rodgers not being there part of it, because I'm not sure how many people around here actually care about him missing out on minicamp, but it is going to be fascinating from the standpoint of that team this year. The Titans see them really early. Like, they're here week 2. So the Titans see the Jets really early into the year. And this is a make-it-or-break-it year for everybody there. I mean, Rodgers has said that this offseason. Like, if they don't perform well, if he doesn't perform well, then they're probably not all going to be there the year after that. So it's going to be interesting to see how they actually play. But this Rodgers stuff, and Charles has alluded to it, it feels like there's something every week with him that has nothing really to do with football, which is hilarious when you consider last year toward the end of the year, one of his most famous quotes was talking about how bleep that has nothing to do with football has got to get out of here. And there's a whole lot of stuff not having to do with football going on with Aaron Rodgers right now. It feels like to me, Adam, and look, trust me, I've watched as much Aaron Rodgers as probably anybody over the last decade. He's obviously elite. He is one of the greatest throwers of the football of all time. I have no doubt that if he stays healthy, he will play well. But it does kind of feel like that place in general is just a house of cards. It's been 2010 or whatever it's been since they've made the playoffs. I'm not convinced Robert Saleh is a great coach. I'm not sure he's the guy to handle Rodgers either. And if they start to get a little bit of turmoil in there, I could see that thing falling apart very quickly.
Yeah, and the word that he used rhymes with wool spit.
Yes.
To describe what he doesn't want in the building. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers has reached a point where you have to weigh the talent versus the distraction, right? You know, he is still an immensely talented quarterback. Now he barely lasted in his first season in a New York Jets uniform because he tore his Achilles, and the season went downhill from there fairly quickly for the New York Jets because, of course, they had a deal. They had Zach Wilson in there for a little bit. What other random quarterbacks did they throw in there?
I don't even remember.
Was Mike White? Was Mike White one of them?
I think that was the year before.
That was the year before. Yeah. Okay. Either way, not a great look. Was Trevor Siemian? I don't know.
Maybe it's Siemian. Yeah.
But either way, you know, the Jets certainly do have high hopes, but it's just all of the headlines with Aaron Rodgers. It's just it boggles the mind the stuff that this guy gets into. You know, the things that he says on Pat McAfee's show or other podcasts, that he was a vice presidential candidate for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He was approached about being on the independent ticket in the upcoming presidential election.
Which, look, to be honest with you, like, whatever. Like, he says some weird stuff. But, like, look, it's America. You can say whatever you want. Say your stuff. But the part that would bother me if I'm a Jets player or a Jets coach, it's not even really necessarily what he says. I mean, look, I mean, people have their opinions on stuff. But don't get up there and talk about how the stuff that has nothing to do with football and winning needs to get out of here and then be so unaware about yourself that you don't realize that that's exactly what you're doing. And here we are again. And look, I have no idea what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now, as Charles said. The fact that people won't say where he is kind of weird. But that's the part, if I'm a Jets player, that would probably irritate me, is don't get up there and call all of us out at the end of last year about how stuff that has nothing to do with football needs to get out of here, and then watch what you've done this offseason, right? I mean, it's pretty hypocritical.
It is, and, you know, it's, you know, I was curious about how Aaron Rodgers would handle the increased scrutiny of playing in New York. And that's sometimes that's a bit overblown, you know, the New York media, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, although he was a national figure and received a lot of attention, it's a lot different in Green Bay, Wisconsin than it is in the New York region. Because,
yes,
of course, the Jets, by the way, play in New Jersey, for those who didn't know that. I think everybody knows that. But the, you know, I was curious about how he would handle that and how he would be perceived. And he's become tabloid fodder,
yep,
literally, because the papers up there are tabloids. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, as long as he stays healthy, you know, what impact he can really have on the Jets, because they do have players on that team that are intriguing. Like, the idea entering last season of him throwing the ball to Garrett Wilson was incredibly intriguing. You know, Breece Hall was coming off an injury, but an incredibly dynamic running back, and it never got off the ground, no pun intended, with the Jets. But the I don't know, it's just I just something about, like, I appreciate Aaron Rodgers' ability to say what he feels he wants to say, even if I don't agree with a lot of it. But it's just flooding the zone with so much BS. It's hard to get it straight. But the interesting thing is the Titans' home opener, week 2, to the New York against the New York Jets.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see where the Jets are. Let's see what happens. I don't know who they play in week 1.
I think they're at San Francisco.
That's right. That's right.
To San Francisco and then here to Nashville.
That's right. So they've got a tough matchup to start the NFL regular season, and then, you know, it'll be interesting to see all of the fallout when training camp comes back, see if Aaron Rodgers is available, and what state the New York Jets are in when they come to Nashville. I mean, because that's a game the Titans will absolutely need to win, you know, a conference rival and someone you might be competing for a playoff spot against. So, yeah, just the Aaron Rodgers stuff, it's just become so tiresome.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, The Green Bay part of this, like, they dealt with it for a long time. Obviously, he was a great player. Still is a great player. But on some level, they've got to be thrilled with the way that this has played out as plane number 70 goes over the top of us today. Again, live out here at Duncan.
Well, we're talking crap about the Jets.
Yeah,
so, you know, that's their form of payback, I guess.
Pretty good. Nothing gets past you.
Yeah.
326 Harding Place. We're out here today at Duncan, the grand opening. Come out, get you a coffee, get you a donut. We'll be out here for the rest of our show as well. Taking more of your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers, take your thoughts on all things NFL and Titans, 615-737-1025. Our final segment of the day coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live out at Duncan 326 Harding Place. Booster has shown up for the Nashville Sounds. So a younger Adam Vingan would be even more terrified with more mascots showing up by the minute.
Chase has said that he wants to see me fight a mascot, but I don't think that would go well for me. I don't have the extra padding that Booster in this giant iced coffee does. But, yes, we've got Booster. We've got a walk-in iced coffee. We've got actual iced coffee. We've got donuts. We've got hot coffee. We've got giveaways. We've got you and me for another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So get on here before you – well, you still can. We've got airplanes. The Nashville Airport, plenty of business.
A lot of people
this
asking
morning
about the airplanes today.
Yes.
We're out here doing a remote broadcast, obviously.
Yes.
In a great spot where we love Duncan. When I tell you it could not be more in the flight path,
yes,
than these airplanes,
yes,
like it's potential. Like, we might as well be sitting on the runway, which is pretty funny. Like, it's actually been pretty funny.
The planes are flying directly overhead. Fortunately, we haven't seen any car accidents, no road rage.
Yeah.
Nothing. And it's a very busy intersection here on Harding Place. But thank you to Duncan for having us. And Chase and Big Joe are going to be at Duncan tomorrow?
Yep, Cool Springs.
Okay,
yep.
So Cool Springs, Duncan, tomorrow you can catch up with Chase and Big Joe and see if another mascot can come out and Chase can challenge it to a fight.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to egg me on.
Yep, absolutely. Final thoughts on the Titans here as we kind of wrap things up today on the program. We talked about the defensive side of the ball earlier. So much attention has gone to the offensive side this offseason, and we all know why. You know, it was interesting to get Zach Lyons' thoughts on the Burks part of this. One thing that he said that I wonder if it's actually part of the plan or if they're just hopeful that it plays out this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talked about clearly with the roles being what they are right now, Burks is not going to get a ton of opportunity offensively. We all understand that. You know, he talked about, you know, if he got 350 yards, three touchdowns, 30 catches, that would be, in his role, pretty good based on what we expect to see from him. But he also talked about, you know, next season, as you get beyond this upcoming year, you know, Boyd's on a one-year deal. Hopkins has 1 year left on his deal. And could Burks get into the plans as wide receiver number two beyond that? You know, a lot of the answer to that question, I think I agree with Zach, would go into things that we see behind the scenes that we just have no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
What is his work ethic like? How is he practicing? What is he doing inside the building? Like, all of that's going to factor into it. But, if I'm the Titans, I'm not planning on that. Like, especially it's a new regime. Like, none of these people were here when Treylon Burks got drafted. And talking about Carthon and now the coaching staff. If it plays out that way and you feel like he could be a part of your group moving forward, then great. But I'm certainly not the plan is not, at least from my perspective, for Treylon Burks to be wide receiver number two. I've said this. Really, regardless, even if best case scenario plays out this year for the Titans at wide receiver and things go great, I still think they need to take a wide receiver high in the draft next year. Like, there's not a path to me with the roster currently constructed and the contractual situation currently what it is, and that can change, but what it is right now, they're going to have to draft another wide receiver next year. I don't see any way around it.
Yes, and I heard Jarrett's theory yesterday that the reason why the Titans have been so effusive in their praise of Treylon Burks is to increase his value to wide receiver needy teams. And look, there's always
a value from what, a seventh to a sixth?
Hey, if you can get a higher pick, you take it, right? But either way, yeah, just we talked about this yesterday about what our expectations are for Treylon Burks during The Choice Is Yours. And I think mine was I think I said 20 receptions for 350 yards and two touchdowns. That was my baseline. And that might be optimistic.
Yeah.
If he is, I mean, I'd love to know how often he's going to be on the field. of course, barring injury, as long as the top three receivers stay healthy. But, you know, maybe he can make an impact on special teams, but how often do we talk about those players, you know, in terms of their overall impact to the team, gunners and such? Yep. So it's unfortunate for Treylon Burks. No, he certainly hasn't helped himself. It didn't help that he got decapitated, figuratively, catching his one touchdown in the NFL against the Eagles a couple of years ago. But, you know, the attachment of being drafted with the pick that the Titans acquired for A.J. Brown, that's just always going to haunt him. And really the only way he can get out of that shadow is to no longer be on this team. And it seems like we might be headed there. I just don't see a path forward right now.
No, I mean, again, the expectation for him is going to be low heading into this year. I'm more intrigued by, like, what are they going to get out of Boyd? Like, everybody's going to focus in on Hopkins and Ridley, and I get it. Like, Hopkins, we've talked about him, 75 catches over 1,000 yards last year. Ridley, you paid a ton of money to, and you got Boyd cheap. What does Boyd still have left in the tank? Because the price tag that they signed him for, I was shocked by. Like, I thought he would get more than that, especially when you consider the nature of that position and what guys are getting paid right now. I mean, Tyler Boyd's not a superstar wide receiver, but I was still shocked that they got him for as little amount of money as they did. How big of a factor is he going to be in this offense over the middle? Like, that's going to be really intriguing to me. And how does that translate into, you know, can he be the guy when it's third and five and you need to pick up the first down? Can he be a consistent, reliable weapon there? Like, that's what they wanted Kyle Phillips to be when they drafted him, and it hasn't worked out that way. Can Boyd be that guy? And in this offense, how important is it to have that guy in the slot that can do that? Like, you feel great about Hopkins and Ridley, but if Boyd can give you anything close to what he's given them in Cincinnati, then all of a sudden you got the makings of a pretty darn good wide receiver core right there with those three.
Yeah, and I think that's it, that you have someone in Tyler Boyd who has a track record of success versus someone like Kyle Phillips who doesn't and has struggled to stay on the field. Yep. You also, of course, have the familiarity between Boyd and Brian Callahan. You know, I'm sure Boyd could have a bigger role just because, you know, the Titans do not have, you know, that go-to tight end for those short catches.
Yep.
You know, I bought the Chigakonkwo hype last offseason.
Yeah.
I liked what I saw from him near the end of the previous season. I thought he was going to have a bigger role in the Titans offense. I thought he was going to break out as one of these young dynamic tight ends in the NFL. It didn't happen that way. So and he appears to be going into camp again as the top tight end on the team. So that's where Boyd comes in, where that you have that safety valve for Will Levis, which may in normal circumstances be a tight end. But because of Chig's ineffectiveness, it will probably be Tyler Boyd. So I think Tyler Boyd will have an important role.
Yep, and then, I mean, in addition to that, in this new offense with a new way of doing things, can Chig be more effective? Can Josh Wiley be more effective? Like, there's so much unknown about this offense.
Mm-hmm.
And that, number one, that's what excites me. It's also what scares me a little bit, right? Like, how long is it going to take for some of these pieces to come together? Because with the Titans schedule being what it is, I mean, we talked about it, they got a lot of tough games to begin the season, so we'll see like how quickly it can come together then. But you know, it's a mystery box on that side of the ball, and it begins at quarterback. Like, if the quarterback is good, then a lot of these other issues are going to take care of itself, right? Like, you know,
yes,
if Will Levis is a good player, then the receiving corps is probably going to look pretty good, tight ends are probably going to look pretty good. I mean, that's what the majority of it comes down to. But it's going to be, you know, a lot of intrigue heading into the year about what exactly they're going to see. It was interesting to hear Zach Lyon's breakdown of the offense and kind of stylistically what he expects. If you missed that, you can go check that out. Robbie and Rex Road, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. We appreciate everybody at Duncan for having us out here today, 326 Harding Place, the grand opening of Duncan. We got mascots, we got dogs, we got all kinds of stuff going on out here. That is going to do it for us today here on the program. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next live from the Omni Nashville Hotel. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.